welcome back to another episode of The Mailbag, where we answer your questions. And this is a Brucey bonus this week because we're going to be answering two questions, but they're both on the same topic and one of them is a pretty short answer. So we thought we could definitely cover two aspects. Now, the first element is all around giving samples, getting in that horrible little room and producing a sample. This easy bit, and I had to refrain from doing the, I don't even know what they're called, you know, the
quote, little bunny ears.
Yeah, quote unquote, the easy bit. As we know, we've covered on it, we dedicated a whole episode to it way back in series one about the how it's anything but the easy bit. But anyway, we had a question in through Instagram, asked us, how do you deal with the pressure of producing a sample? And I'll just, and the second question, the second topic we'll be coming on to, it was a topic that came up in our community one day in the Nexus Fertility chat. A group of guys were all talking about abstinence periods. How long should it be? Because some were being advised certain periods, others were being advised other lengths of time. So we said to them, this isn't really for us to answer. Everyone's being told different stuff. Let's take it to a professional. So we've got an answer from one of the leading professionals on that. So we'll come on to that second because I want to address the question from the direct question from a listener. I don't even know what I've been talking about to come up with that.
I think you're thinking about the user of a room because we use them.
In what ways?
Literally, you go in there and do the one thing that is deemed very private in life. I have a question for you before we get on with this. What was your first thought when you first walked in?
First room and the first clinic. I remember it so well. I remember the waiting room. It's like an out-of-body experience.
Yeah.
And we had to drive like an hour away to do it as well because they didn't have the facility to do it where I lived at the time. And I just remember walking in, and what struck me was just how clinical, and I know that probably sounds obvious because you're going into a clinic, but there was just nothing. It was like everything was wipeable. Remote control for the TV was in a freezer bag. I don't even know if there were magazines, because I didn't go looking for it, and I didn't see any obvious. There was like a chaise lounge, like that pull down tissue, like the giant tissue you get doctors, it comes down over the whole bed.
Yeah.
I remember not wanting to touch anything. So thankfully I had signal, so I just used my phone. But then even the pots, how do I aim in there? Because then the pot will be upside down. It's something you never have to consider. And then suddenly you've got all these logistical and practical nightmares happening. The pressure around, don't miss the first bit. The first bit's important. If you do, let us know, note it down, all this. My God.
My first experience, one of my first experiences, I should say, I remember walking into a particular room and there was a massive fucking window, right, with a blind on it. And the first thing I thought was, what if someone can see me? I genuinely remember thinking that I've got to do this. And then I remember taking note of the weird sink in the corner, which looked like...
Yeah, I've heard you talk about this.
They'd nicked it from like a hair salon where people put their head back into it.
I sent you a picture of one when I was at the barber's going, oh, look, it's your sink.
That's it. Honestly, there's certain things that you really remember. Like you've talked about the chaise lounge a few times. You've got to take it as it comes, haven't you? Like literally, it's the anxiety was high.
Oh, mate, it's like an out of body experience. It's so unsexy.
Oh.
And I remember Jenna saying, you get one for free, but then it comes down to the stereotypical thing of, oh, the easy bit, just go and knock one out. It's anything but. And I remember saying to her after, okay, I think I probably was like white with shock. I was like, that was horrendous. I'll circle back to the question. There's so much pressure. And I had a time where I couldn't do it. I was in there for like 45 minutes, an hour. And it wasn't happening. I was in my head. And that is not a place you want to be in that. Because, that the pressure was mounting. The paranoia was growing. I was like, oh, I wonder, they're probably talking about me. Oh, they're probably saying, oh, what's taking him so long and all this?
Yeah.
And of course, they're not. They're going about their job. And it didn't help that in that occasion, I was next door to the staff room.
Yeah.
So I could hear them, I could hear the muffled sounds of voices. And I'm like, oh, they're probably going, oh, room one or whatever. Yeah, he's been in there ages. What's he doing?
Yeah.
And I couldn't do it. I had to walk out with the empty cup. I had to give it back to the receptionist because, again, this was like just the unfortunate circumstances around it was that it was one where they didn't have a hatch in the room. I had to go and give it to, into reception.
Right.
And the lady's gone, it's empty. And I was like, I know. As I pretty much then legged it out. But yeah, it's awful. And then once that had happened that time, I then had to face that anxiety every time I went back in after. And this was only my second clinic, my second venue, because I ended up using three different clinics or hospitals or whatever else. And so this was only two of three in terms of samples, maybe half of what I ever produced. So from that point onwards, every time I was like, in my head, I was like, this can't happen again. This can't happen again.
Yeah.
What if it does? And the pressure compounds. And, but yeah, I'll share a bit about how I've reduced that over time. But I don't know if you have any anecdotes.
I know we make light of it, but it is, especially at those first few. That first one, you just don't know what's going to happen, what that room's going to look like, what the procedure is to get you there, what happens if it doesn't go right. There's so many ifs, buts, and maybes. But if anyone is listening to this and they're looking, they've got to do their first sample, it's, I think, acknowledging that how you feel, that you do feel a bit uncomfortable. You will feel that way. And that's okay, because everybody feels like that.
Mm.
I haven't, you may have, but I definitely haven't spoken to anybody that was like, yeah, it was completely cool. Everybody has that bit of anxiety leading up to that first sample. And I think every sample, because you're, especially when it's male factor, the results are really key. And that the reason you're there having that treatment is because of what's in that pot. So yeah. Every time you give a sample, you're going to, there's that added anxiety about it. It would be interesting to have an open conversation with someone who isn't male factor and see how they felt about going to give it compared to someone that has. I would imagine there'd be a bit of anxiety about having to do it because it's quite a personal thing, isn't it? But
especially because, like, generally they'll be timing it, doing it on the day where the other half's having the egg collection, so there is still obviously a lot of pressure, because it's like it has to be there. And then I imagine that probably, I don't know, like you said, we don't know, but worries of what if, or what if it doesn't work or whatever. So yeah, there's so much behind it, isn't there?
I do think that their experience would be different because of the journey leading up to that sample. The reason we had treatment was because of me. Your experience will definitely determine how you feel going into that room. And that would be an interesting conversation.
Like you said, the first one was like a bit of an unknown, kind of very strange experience. But then by the time I did the second one, because the first one had come back with angiospermia. So then the second one, that's when the pressure really started kicking in for me. The way I can best answer this question is if I take it up to that one where I couldn't do it, which was actually post varicocele embolization, which was actually probably about just over a year and a half after that first ever sample. And in this meantime, I've done so many others, because everyone always wants to go, oh, we'll try our, we want to run a test through our lab. Because they all think that probably the difference isn't what they do and stuff. So that one from there on was, that's when the pressure had hit that complete pinnacle for me where it didn't happen. But then I was got in my head, and it's a bad place to be. So first and foremost, it started with communication, actually, with other people who weren't going to be in that room. Firstly, like my wife, but then also the clinic. I had to phone back the clinic after legging it out and say, look, it didn't happen. Can I come back? They're like, of course, yeah, no worries. We can make that happen for you. But then I had to tell Jenna, and she was like, what do you mean it didn't happen? But then I explained, like, just the pressure. I hadn't communicated that up until that point. But what is, because again, it can be downplayed as the easy bit, like one for free type thing, the one that you're not having to hide. But I said, look, every time I step into that room, it's a real pressure cooker. And so by bringing that out into the open with Jenna, because part of the reason I was under so much pressure was thinking about her as well, like thinking, oh, what is, how's she going to think if it's another like adverse result? But then she put calm to my nerves by saying, we're in it together. Whatever the result is, we'll deal with. And so then that reduced one element of that, of course. And then I then realized like patterns of, and bearing in mind, like I said, I had done a few at this point, but I realized that I needed like a nervous poo before I went in.
Yeah.
So it was knowing, has the clinic got a toilet in the room? Because some have. If it hasn't, making sure I go before, not getting in the room, because that part of what was causing me that problem that time because I hadn't managed to do my routine. I was like,
yeah.
Oh, well, I haven't done this. And because it was a bit like superstitions with like sports teams or whatever. Oh, they're my lucky pants or whatever. But I was like, I haven't followed my routine. Something's off. So if you do have routines, stick to them. Make sure you reverse engineer it. So get to the point of you giving a sample and step back, right back through to the start of the day or whatever it is. And then put in every step you need to get there. And just realize that if you don't manage to, it's okay. It was okay when I didn't. I was able to go back and produce that sample at a time that was more suited for me. And that's the other thing as well. I've never been a morning person, if you can gather what I'm saying here. I'd gone in at 9 a.m. because I wanted to just get it done. That didn't suit me and my kind of how I work. So then I learned from there, afternoon sessions were preferable for me. So again, it's making it work for you in ways that you know are going to stack the odds a bit more in your favor, reduce that pressure, get out of your head, and realizing that if you are in your head and suddenly that when that internal talk kicks in, sometimes it is best to just pull the ejector cord, get out, go back again, reset. Don't make yourself get to the point where you're chafing like I was. And it's that long.
Walk out a bit sore than you went in.
Yeah, exactly. Just be kind to yourself. It's not easy. It's a horrible situation, but you can. There are ways to reduce that stress and like I say, reverse engineer it.
I've never thought about it, but I had a routine. I had this things that you do just, and I think we're talking about it a bit more frequently now, but that term of control, controlling the situation where you feel comfortable. And ours actually was a bit simpler. Like because we had such a long drive, we always stopped at the same place on the way and I got a bottle of water. And it worked. And after over the 45 minutes, I'd drink the water just to make sure I was hydrated. And I ended up having my own routine. And when I got in the room, I always did the same thing. I milled around a bit, had a look about, got everything in place that I wanted to before doing what I had to do. I took my time purposely rather than thinking, I've got to get in, I've got to get out. Because those first few times, I felt like I had to get in, I had to get out. Mm. But actually, when you take your time, I don't think you can enjoy it, but you can take your time to feel not rushed.
Yeah.
And if you understand that, and like you said, learn when works well for you and when doesn't, and slowly put it together over two or three trips, because the chances are most men have to do this two or three or more times. And I'm sure mine's double figures. You get used to how you work in that situation. And it's really important because we've both experienced that worry of what's going on outside that door, what people thinking, what are people saying. In all honesty, they just want us. You want you to succeed. They're there to do a job. It's not if you were doing in the toilets in a nightclub, it would be completely different. You're not. You're there doing something for a reason, and people want you to achieve, and they want to give you the best environment possible. But it is. It's one of those things that you have to acknowledge that it's going to feel uncomfortable. It is going to be difficult. And initially, those first initial times when you're getting used to it, and that's okay. We've also come back to communication, communicating with your loved ones like you did with Jenna. And I did with Jen. Like I remember saying to her, I'm really nervous about this. And she was like, it's okay. Whatever comes of it, I'm here with you. Yeah, it's just acknowledging those simple things. So I would say talk to your partner. Let them know how you're feeling. Acknowledge that you're going to feel a bit uncomfortable initially those first few times and figure out what works for you and take your time. It's okay.
And also, I don't know a great deal about this because we never did it, but your partner can go in with you as well, I believe. Yeah. But check with your clinic if it is allowed. And actually, you can even have sex. I know that they can give you condoms that are like, they don't damage the sperm in any way. And then you can just put it into the cup from there or whatever. But I talk about that. These are things that I've heard, but I'm pretty sure they are the case. So you can check in with it. Like, if that's going to help you, I personally, Jenna did offer, because the first clinic we went to, they said, oh, your partner come in. And I was like, absolutely not. This is like, this isn't going to make the situation any better for me. Because again, it's what worked for me. It was something I needed to just go in and get done. And make sure I had phone signal or something as a backup, or you as an ultimate backup. You've always got the magazines or the video.
So what you said was, Jenna, I'm not going, you're not coming in, I'm taking my phone in.
This is my moment. But yeah, no, it's, so just know that you're not alone, and there are many people who have experienced that exact same anxiety and worry and pressure. And again, as always, come to the community. There's just shy at the time of recording of 200 people in there, 200 lads who just truly get it. And we're all really supportive. Everyone's been there. We've all got stories. We've all shared our sample stories at some points, which are very funny. But yeah, unless you've got anything else to add, I'll come on to the second part.
No, but if anyone wanted to, we just previously, you've talked about when we dedicated a whole episode to this, it was episode 3 of series 1. If you want to go back.
Classic.
Yeah, it's one of those that it's a serious conversation, but at the same time, we do have a chuckle in it. It is worth a listen if you haven't listened.
And that's the thing, if you're feeling the pressure in this, like obviously as that listener is, and it's messaging, just listen to us two idiots talk about some of our funny stories. Hopefully we'll just humanize it a bit for you, that you're not alone.
Not while you're trying to do it, though.
I don't know. Don't rule anything out, mate.
Whatever makes you tick, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
At the Male Fertility Podcast, we know how powerful the right support can be, which is why we've partnered with Fertility Family to share Imperil. And nutrition matters when it comes to fertility. But let's be honest, maintaining a perfectly balanced diet for conception is incredibly hard. Choosing a supplement can be just as confusing, especially when many multivitamins contain strong antioxidants that can actually harm sperm quality. Imperil is different. It's made from activated micronutrients that support every cell in the body, from the largest, the egg, to the smallest, the sperm. These nutrients have been clinically shown to significantly improve live birth rates in men and women who have previously been struggling to conceive. Imperil is different. It's made using activated micronutrients that support every cell in the body, from the largest, the egg, to the smallest, the sperm. These nutrients have been clinically shown to significantly improve live birth rates in men and women who have previously struggled to conceive. What we like is that behind the science at Fertility Family are real stories from real people. To find out more, visit www.fertilityfamily.co.uk. And if you decide it's right for you, our listeners get 10% off using the code MFPOD10. That's MFPOD10. Now, back to the episode.
This was a general topic, and it was a big piece of discussion in our support community, actually, in the chat group, because it all started one day. Someone went in and said, look, what abstinence periods are you boys being told? Because always I've been told whatever that the period that they've got, but that differs to other stuff. So we had the privilege, and friend of the pod, he's been on twice, Alan Pacey, Professor Alan Pacey, MBE, absolute OG in the fertility space, male fertility space. So I took it to him. And so I'll read out what I went to him, just to be clear as to what he was answering. So several members have been told very different things regarding the ideal abstinence period before providing a semen sample or trying to conceive. Some are told to abstain for 2 to 5 days. Others are being advised to ejaculate every 24 to 48 hours due to DNA fragmentation and oxidative stress. And a few have even been told to provide samples after as little as 12 hours. So obviously I asked him, like, can you give any clarification on this? And this is his response. And this is why we do it. I'm not going to add anything to this, really. This is pretty much one of the best person you can ask on it in this country. So this is what he said. For initial semen analysis, it's desirable for everyone to have the same abstinence period so they can be compared to the WHO nomogram. That's as in the World Health Organization. The WHO actually specifies a period of between 2 and 7 days. Labs are at liberty to choose their own, but they need to validate their data against these nomograms. The key here is to get a good measure of testicular output and see what the testicles are capable of producing. That's all. In terms of providing samples for treatment, then it's a different story. If you only need enough sperm for IVF or ICSI, then abstinence times can be shorter. And there is value in having a short abstinence time, as it means that sperm are newer slash fresh off the production line. Thus, in theory, their DNA quality should be better. The data to support this is not great, but the theory is sound. It's worth thinking that in most studies, which have looked at the optimal frequency of intercourse for conception, generally say that it should be 2 or 3 times a week. Thus, that fits with the shorter abstinence time being requested by clinics for treatment. Succinct, backed by data and science and by the big man himself. We can't argue with that. And that's why we asked him.
No, no, and it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? It all depends on what you're giving the sample for. If you're that first bit that you talked about, you want to see what the quality's like in line with what a bigger population, shall we say, because then you can determine maybe what treatment is needed. But then actually, if you're looking at IVF or ICSI, you want a better quality, which obviously, from what he's explained, comes through a shorter time period. Yeah, we went through it. We got a range of times. There was some that said between the 7 days, under 7 days. Some said within 48 hours. But it's important to ask the question, be really clear with your clinic and get their guidelines and what they think. And well, their guidance really, isn't it? Yeah. They are the experts in it.
But they'll be doing it based on your situation, your background, your data and all that. Yeah. And it's always good. And that's why we do what we do, is to bring information to advocate for yourselves, which is we covered in a previous episode. It's to ask questions as to why. Yeah,
perfect. Thank you, answer. Alan. Thank you, Alan. Yeah. He's always been fantastic to us, hasn't he? And it's great that he'd be willing to answer that so we can put it out to you guys. We really appreciate him. But no, that's a good place to end this mailbag. It's been a good one. I've got to be careful how I word this. I always enjoy talking about this topic because I really feel that it's something that is quite prominent in men's minds when they're going through this, like giving those samples, and it's like the unspoken pressure, but then also how long do I wait? What does the data say and everything? It's so many good things have come out from this conversation. So it's amazing, mate.
Yeah, nice one.
Obviously, if people want to get hold of us, they can, if they want to send a message in or a question in, contact us via Instagram, the Male Fertility Podcast, or you can send a message to Nexus Fertility, and that is simply at Nexus Fertility on Instagram. Yeah. Always here to listen, and we'll see you all on the next one.
See you then. Ciao.
Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favor and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to talk about in the mailbag, please drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message that comes through. And if you'd like a bit more guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by men who get it. For the latest updates, follow us on social media at the Male Fertility Podcast. Remember, you're not alone.